That's the coal train leaving the North Fork Valley to power plants like Widow's Creek in Bridgeport, Alabama. Here in the North Fork Valley, there are three mines aligned along the North Fork of the Gunnison River: the Bowie Mine, the Oxbow, and the Elk Creek. The Oxbow is no longer in operation. They all extract high-energy burning coal with low-content ash and sulfur. In 2008, the three mines peaked, producing 15 million tons of coal. But now coal is in decline in America. The Energy Information Administration reports that in the year 2000, 52% of electricity came from the coal-fired power plants. In 2010, that number is 45%. Federal regulations mandating reduced carbon dioxide emissions and natural gas becoming cheaper via innovations in drilling such as shale fracking are part of the reason. And it appears to be the national trend. My grandfather was a coal miner in Kentucky. 38,000 jobs have been lost in Kentucky and West Virginia. Some studies suggest that coal in central Appalachia is depleted entirely. Some believe it is not a sustainable resource. So what does sustainable really mean? Here is one simple definition: to be used without being completely used up or destroyed. In a continuing series here on Local Motion, I'll explore the concepts of sustainability and ask these questions. Is it possible to create a true sustainable future in the U.S., a country born out of the Industrial Revolution, with coal and steel being the driving force? How do we help people transition from jobs that are no longer sustainable and maintain a vibrant economic community, especially in small towns where industry like coal have been the dominant revenue? I went out on the streets of Paonia and I asked people what they felt about coal and what they thought sustainability meant.
What do you think of when you hear the word sustainable?
I think of something that is natural, that sustains itself without having any influence outside, unnatural influence. I don't think coal is sustainable because it has to be extracted through measures. Outside measures, unnatural.
We don't create necessarily more than we need, but we also don't have waste either. And there's always enough. That's sustainable.
What do you think about coal?
I think it's awesome. My husband works for DMEA, and that's why he has a job, because coal supplies the power for us to be able to use the power lines and telephone lines and everything. So
it means people helping each other in a small, in an area, to be, have everything they need, food, and well, mainly food I think of when I think of that, but I suppose it could be housing too, but so you can sustain life as long as it doesn't get too weird.
What do you think about coal?
I'm for coal. It's a resource we have. We should use it.
If we take it away and we try to rely on something else, I mean, if you took coal away and you try to run everything off of it, it's just like Las Vegas. Take it away for a week and see what happens. The lights are gone.
I think we can transition energy sources. I don't know that our town will survive.
It would be ideal if we had another resource in place. Coal is gotten us here, so nothing wrong with it. It's just probably need to move on to something better or could be in trouble.
What do you think of when you hear the word sustainable?
Life. I've lived here for a long time. I don't find any problem with coal. I find it a problem with the corporations and the mills and the people that use it that won't build good enough refineries to take some of the pollutants out of it. I feel the same way about gas here. I'd rather get it out of my backyard and go to war over it someplace. I have worked for gas rigs and I have been in the mines. I know it's possible to get gas and oil and not destroy water. It's just the cost value is what's more important when they're getting it out of their own backyard. Gas companies, oil rigs, people like that, if they're taking it out of their own backyard, they tend to be pretty careful about it if it's coming from others. And the farther they get away from America, the further they care how much damage they do.
How do you think we can help coal miners transition through this time?
Of what time of what?
When coal miners are being laid off.
I don't know. That's part of the nature of the business. They have fires and they have cave-ins and they So I don't know. They usually have to move on and maybe can come back, go to another state.
So do you think coal is renewable or non-renewable? Sustainable, not sustainable?
Well, I'm not so sure what you mean about those words, but I believe it's in the ground and we should use it. I know things are polluting, but there's a lot of people. There's a lot of cars on the road.
It may be that solutions lay in understanding the interconnectedness of the problems and with finding common values that can unify us instead of divide us. I started with Elaine Brett. She was an advisor with the North Fork Heart and Soul Project. Here she explains what that project did and its lasting legacy in the North Fork Valley.
Well, the project actually started about 5 years ago with a group of people from the community basically asking the question, what's next for the North Fork Valley? Back in 2009 or so, we were seeing that there were going to be changes, and we needed to prepare for that. One of the things that was obvious was that the coal mines weren't going to last forever, and we were starting to see that the clock was ticking. So we started some community conversations with the help of the Chambers of Commerce in Hotchkiss and Paonia, and gathered information about what was really important to people here in this valley and what they thought might be the next step, what economy, what industries might be where we were headed. And from that little project, which we ended up calling the North Fork Vision 2020, we proposed from the data from the community that there were five industries, five fields that if we got stronger in those, that those would be the launch of our economy. We stumbled on a grant opportunity from the Orton Family Foundation, which had a project called Heart and Soul. And it was to explore the values of a community and to find what matters most, what's most important, and how a community can build on that rather than looking at how to solve a specific problem. It was more about what's important to a community, what is our sense of place, and how do we use that in decision making going forward. So it fell very nicely, and we were surprised when we won the grant. It gave us a 2-year opportunity to go into the community, talk to people, and ask a whole different set of questions, not about problem solving, not about specifics, but about general things, about what matters most to the people who live here and the people who come here. Why is this place special? Why is it different? Why is this community different? And that's really what the project was. And we're at the end of it, at the end of those 2 years right now, and putting many, many, many pieces of data together and lots of comments from the community. And it's a very rich way to look at your community and to see what people need and what they want. In order of ranking, they're all very important. But I would say that the one that came out as absolutely most important to the people of the community is the rural nature, the landscape, the environment that we live in. The others were our sense of community and our small towns, and the people love the small towns. Our traditions and heritage, very important value to the folks here. A steady economy, and very interesting discussions around that, of what that means, in considering we are historically in a boom and bust kind of area. And also one that created some very interesting discussions and conversations was that we bundled into our value of freedom and independence, and along with that, a sense of responsibility.
In light of the West Elk Mine layoffs of approximately 150 miners, can you find some way of tying in this information to that? How do we help those people that have been laid off, or can we help those people that have been laid off?
We made the effort in this project to reach out to people from all over the community. So we very consciously went and actually had several gentlemen from the mines on our community advisory team. And we made an effort to make sure we were getting feedback from all aspects of the community. You know, some of the things that we learned were how dedicated many of these people are to the job, and it's in their blood, and what it's really an occupation that is a part of them, part of their heart and soul. For others, it's just a job, and they would be willing to do something else if something else were available. So there's a real range in there. What we also learned was that, you know, how important the coal mining was to the heritage of this area and to the history of it, and many people in the community dedicated and really believing that is the only and the fundamental backbone of the economy here. On the other side, we heard from many people how things are changing and the need for that industry to jump on board with the changes that are occurring. I think no one in the valley wants to shut down the coal mines. It's part of us. It's part of the economy. It's an important part. However, there's global impacts. There are things happening to the world that we have no control over. And I think the extraction industries are one that are feeling that right now. What do we do with that as a community in order to survive? One of the things early on with our North Fork Vision 2020 pointed to 5 different industries. And the thinking was, if as a community we grew each of those, if we put focus on each of those, that not individually, but collectively, we could bring the economy up, bring up the opportunity for jobs and the opportunity for a stronger economy. And energy resources was one of those, but we looked at it as a package, not just coal mining. We looked at renewables. We looked at other things. And we have in this valley an opportunity for energy production in many, many ways. And that was one of the industries that came out. But also what came out was putting some more emphasis on our agriculture, our food production, looking at different markets for that. Do we need just to be ranching and large crops, or can our specialty crops really lead the way here? We looked at tourism and recreation as a strong area to bring people into the valley, to bring them to spend money, enjoy what we have here. We looked at health and wellness. Many people come here because of the clean air, the clean water, the beautiful landscape, the ability to just take a breath and slow down for a little while. We certainly see people from urban areas just really enjoying what's here. And then another area was the creative sector. And that's an area that has taken off through the Creative Coalition and through the naming of this valley as a creative district, as an important part of it. Coal mines are important, but what if? What if we could grow these other areas? And it's happening. I really see it happening in some of the new businesses coming in some of the new people coming in, and in some of the folks who have lived here for a long time, looking back and saying, yeah, we have to do something a little different. And in order to keep what we have, in order to keep the importance of our rural landscape and our small town feel.
That was Elaine Brett, an advisor with the North Fork Heart and Soul Project. I spoke with Michael Soule, an internationally acclaimed biologist who lives in the North Fork Valley. He is renowned for creating the field of conservation biology.
How do you see humans and nature going into the future? How are we going to solve some of these major problems?
Well, the irony is that it's now, I believe, the administration's policy to do everything it can to avoid global climate change and warming. We're continuing to extract and utilize some of the most greenhouse gas productive sources of energy, and including coal. So it's totally in contrary to the policies of reducing greenhouse gas emissions and decreasing the probability that the planet will suffer a heat death as a result of carbon dioxide and pollution of other kinds. So it's just crazy as far as I'm concerned. We should be using renewables instead of allowing the importation of highly toxic greenhouse gas producing fuels. Somebody's making a lot of money from it, though. That's why it's happening.
But it seems that because we are dominating the planet, we're also destroying the planet. Would you agree with that?
Yes, we've been doing that for a long time, since it started really not in hunter-gatherer times. Those people lived in a, quote, sustainable, unquote, way. But since agriculture and the the start of the population explosion, which was coincident with the beginning of agriculture, where there was a surplus of food. Since then, humans have dominated more and more, and we see that in the amount of fossil fuels that are being burned, which are not renewable. And we see it in the population explosion. If it weren't for the agricultural revolution, there wouldn't be enough food to feed the number of people that are on the earth today. And we're still seeing habitats all over the world, including tropical forests in the Congo and the Amazon, being leveled and destroyed primarily to grow crops like soybeans and maize or corn to feed people and to feed the coffers of the large corporations that produce most of these grains or grain-like materials. So the Anthropocene scares the hell out of a lot of people because it means the end of a world which had nature in it and the beginning or the completion of the human project, which is to totally dominate all processes, all ecological processes on the planet.
I mean, are you saying it's hopeless?
Well, it doesn't mean the world will end. It doesn't even mean that civilization will end. I had my eyes open one time on a trip to India. It's the first time I've been to India. And there are parts of India with wildlife. There are tigers in India, and it's one of the best places in the world to still see them, although the numbers are really diminishing quickly. There won't be wild tigers in India probably for another, after 50 years or so. But what I saw was hordes and hordes of people, really crowded, living happily together in large cities in poverty. In fact, I was amazed and impressed by how happy the Indian people are given their circumstances. It shows that humans can tolerate unsustainable or very difficult conditions. The human spirit is an amazing thing. But it allows us to continue to devastate the rest of the planet in order to increase our numbers at the expense of the numbers of all other creatures on the planet. So from a biologist's perspective, from my perspective, it's a disaster. But from a politician's perspective or from General Mills or General Motors' perspective, it's a great thing. It means more customers and more wealth, at least in the short run, so people can be better consumers. So our children and grandchildren, if we have them, are going to be living in a very hot world. And sea levels will be rising, and climate will change drastically. We're already seeing climate change drastically. Climate has become an unpredictable phenomenon. It used to be pretty predictable. Around the North Fork Valley here, almost all winters, the snow level got to the top wire on the fences, and there was plenty of runoff from the mountains, and these strange spring freezes didn't occur so much, so you could grow a lot more fruit crops and the trees and the orchards. But now the climate's much more unpredictable, much more erratic, and the extremes are higher and the temperatures are higher and lower as Arctic air is now coming down in the winter, but the summers are hotter and the snow melts earlier. And there are these unpredictable freezes that are bad for our orchardists.
What's the future of wildlife and biodiversity?
So we've really messed it up. We've done a bad job in order to produce what hunters want. The agencies that manage hunting don't have a lot of ecologists. They have people who are told, let's sell as many licenses as we can. So they try to maximize the herd of deer and elk. But in doing that, they upset the balance in the forest and the brush country. And their job is to maximize their profit to show the their bosses in Washington and politicians that they're not in the red, certainly, and that they're actually making money for the agency. So it's perverse. It's driven by maximizing income rather than maximizing the resource. I know when I was a graduate student many decades ago, and I would talk to people in the natural resource departments like forestry and fisheries, and they always said, our job is to protect the resource. And the resource means the fish and the wildlife and the forests. You don't hear that at all anymore. You ask them what their job is, and it's totally different. It's economics now. It's not the health of the resource. So there's been this complete turnaround in the ideas that drive, in the philosophy that drives these agencies. It's an expression of what's happened to the rest of our society, which has become focused on consumerism and consumption and profit.
If you were given a chance to change the policies, what would be some of the number one things you would start out and do?
So I would change how these agencies are managed and administered. I would have at least as many ecologists and wildlife biologists and foresters making the rules as there are politicians or the people appointed by politicians to make the rules. It's not irreversible. What we've done to nature, which is push it beyond the bounds of sustainability, it's not too late. Nature is resilient. It's really simple. You would just go back to a more ecological approach to management, which in the long run is even better for the industries. But in terms of short-term profit, it may not be the best. But in terms of long-term sustainability and profitability, it is the best. But we live in a culture which is focused on the short term, on the bottom line this quarter or this year, and not over the next 10 years.
This is Sin Holder for KVNF.